ever beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Welcome to Ever Beyond. It is the 8th of June 2014, and it's nearly 5 past 11 as well. Tonight, I'm asking you to restrain your apathy, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do our best to try and keep things really bland, very uninteresting, and we're trying to just calm everything down, because everything's just far too excited, I think. really, I couldn't think of anything, but the thought, restrain your apathy, comes to mind. And in a way, it's like this is the apathy that is the ennui of what they call compassion fatigue. You know, what we've been talking about in the last hour, the last 2 hours, is your heart is sent out on all these journeys, and not all of it comes back. I'm still joined, I hope, by Katie Galanti. Are you there, my dear?
I'm here.
Oh, excellent. So we've been talking about stuff, and we got into like 9/11 and deja vus and things like that, and so you had deja vus to today, and I'm wondering now that I know about timelines and time travel, and I've spoken to William Stillings, and I've read Sean's book, and it's all about how real time travel is being used and can be used against us. You know, some things get in the wrong hands, and we know that everything's been in the wrong hands for at least 100 years, if not more. So, you know, the worst of all possible situations. And here we are. Now, you were talking, Katie, earlier on about how you were placed in the worst of all possible situations, and yet I think through divine grace you found your way through. So
yeah.
Here we are in the 21st century, and like you said, on 9/11, the first thing I thought was, wow, that looks like a demolition. I've seen a demolition. I've seen a building demolished before, and it looks just like that. So I didn't really buy the whole pancake thing. The other thought was the audacity. How audacious. I know it's a really weird thing to think, but like the audacity of that. But, you know, somebody's got some chutzpah. Actually, it's not like chutzpah, you know. That takes a lot of chutzpah to pull something like that off. To
yes.
say, this is a demolition, but we're blaming the terrorists. And that's like, oh, hang on, haven't I heard that before?
You felt that too, right, when it happened?
Absolutely. Because when I was a kid, I saw a building in Hackney demolished, three of them, actually, and it was an event. You know, we used to go, because they're going to blow the building up. Yeah, right. So I cycled over. It's only a couple of miles from where I live, so I cycled over to watch. You know, it was a picnic. We were all sat on the park. You know, everybody's having a little, you know, got their little chairs, and we watched the building crumble to dust. It's brilliant. What an experience. It's great. If you like fireworks, and look, I'm sorry, Katie, it is definitely a boy thing. Boys like things that go bang, you know,
yep.
Like Hollywood movies. There's always that,
Yeah, so it was fun.
Yeah, it was a great fun. But I also saw the effect of demolition. What, you know, what is it, you know, what does that look like? What does demolition look like? And then I've seen films of that as well. And you see the classic ones of how they get the tower to implode. So it doesn't blow up, it just kind of folds in on itself, which is, again, what happened to, you know, it's all very carefully planned and constructed and modelled on supercomputers and very carefully done. A building like the Twin Towers doesn't fall down like that by accident. So I had all that, and I said to my son, who was like, he was about six at the time, and I said to him, son, today the world has changed.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many people actually had that as a... I have a neighbor who was really deep into... Like, he was basically working with various contracts with them. The military and stuff, and very Matrix, right? And after, when he saw that, that was his sense. It was like, okay, this is the event that is going to change history, right? And then very soon after that, he put it together that the calls that what they were claiming, that the people had made these calls with their cell phones from the airplanes, he put it together that that was not possible. And that was the first domino of his paradigm coming down. Right? It was literally like, I'm an engineer, I know how these things work, and this is not possible. Therefore, and at the time, he was like, there's something wrong with this story, so he actually wrote various letters to various people in positions where they could have heard it, right? Because he was connected that way. And he kept on being shut down. And so then he started thinking, okay, well, if I'm thinking all of these things and nobody wants to listen to me, and nobody wants to listen to the fact that I have expertise that says that this is not possible, then what's going on here, right? And that was his first domino. And then after that, very gradually, the whole house of cards came tumbling down, and to the point that he decided not to do that job anymore and to pull out and to completely change the course of his life, right? But it's interesting how he had that very first sense, even as a kind of like normal person in some ways, right? Not a psychic person. He had that sense that this was this world-changing event, right? And that there was something wrong with it. You had that sense, I had that sense. There's almost like a feeling that there was a heightened, something was heightened energetically around that time. It wasn't just that this event happened. There was a heightened energy around it. I remember the energy of that day. It was a really peak energy kind of day.
There was a disturbance in the force.
There was a disturbance in the force, and there may very well have really been a disturbance in the force, right?
Yeah, well, because now we're looking back and seeing what we know now, what we knew then. Yeah, certainly. The other thing that I felt, I actually felt this wave of love, which was an odd thing, because I was thinking, I wonder if there really, you know, if there really was a real attack, there would be a wave of love, you know, mm-hmm. if it was a real thing. So perhaps that was a kind of parallel dimension. There was lots of parallel dimension things going on that time, wasn't there? So
there were. Also, imagine that this really was a game-changing event. And, well, it was, right? And everything has changed since then. I mean, the planet is the same and everybody is the same and so on. But in terms of the dynamics that we deal on this planet with on this planet now, that was a real game changer, okay? My sense of the déjà vu that I had at the time was that I had already seen it from the future. And I was not that woo-woo, but that was the sense that I had. I had another friend who at the time was in Arizona, in Sedona. She wasn't there living there. She was just there because that's where she was at the time. And, you know, passing by. And And she said that the very first thing that she thought when she saw the images was, the frequency wars have begun. Now, this is a friend of mine who is not a New Ager. She is, you would call her an info warrior, but at the time she was just herself, right? And even the fact that she was in Sedona at the time was kind of interesting because she was in a place with heightened energy, right? And just before it happened, I was in Mount Shasta. Again, because of a series of synchronicities, I was in Mount Shasta. I actually had just arrived back home from Mount Shasta the night before this whole thing started. I woke up for the first time and the event had occurred. And so I had been to a place that had really heightened energy for a week before this event happened. Now, if we truly do believe that there's almost like a military force of starseed soldiers, okay, of which I believe I'm one, you're one, right? It's like a military operation, right? Of all of these starseed soldiers that are truth warriors and energy workers and consciousness raisers and all sorts of other things, right? We are kind of like the galactic command in the bodies. When people talk about the Galactic Federation and all that, yeah, it's true. We do have, there is star family out there that is watching it, but the biggest part of the galactic operation is here, and it's in bodies on the planet, pretending to be human.
Sometimes doing a better or worse job.
That's right. Someone not pretending very well. So in some kind of disguise, right? And the reason for which the people pretend to be human is because you have to be part of the system that you want to change to be able to bypass the free will zone, okay? There's a non-intervention thing because we're in a free will zone, but if you become part of humanity, then you become somebody that can use the free will for the good of humanity, because you're part of it. You're now part of it. So the free will laws say that you can intervene. But if you're not part of humanity, you cannot intervene. So incarnating is about, part of it is as a human, part of it is about being able to then intervene, educate, do all of those things that you need to do, heal or whatever, because you can, because you're a member of the system that you're trying to transform and heal. Okay, which has its drawbacks because the system is very dysfunctional, and so there are beings here from very high dimensions that have to incarnate into a very dense world, and sometimes that means that they forget who they are and stay asleep for the whole thing, for all of it, okay? And unfortunately, that means that some people are lost. Some of the starseed warriors don't awaken, or don't awaken all the way, or only awaken a piece and don't awaken all of it. It's not the most efficient way to go, but it's the only way that allows for intervention to occur, right? So why did I go on about that? I can't remember now.
Disturbances in the force.
Oh, yeah. Okay, disturbances of the force, because imagine that, you know, a lot of these starseed people, they are from the future or can see the future. A lot of them are from the future, right? Coming back to fix a problem. We've talked about this before, right? There's a problem in the future that stems from here. And where does it start? Well, one of the turning points is the 9/11 event. If you imagine that, there would be a bunch of people on the planet who are starseed warriors who, in their database somewhere, have red alert around the 9/11 event. It's almost like an awakening code. So a 9/11 event happens, something in the database of the starseed warriors, like a trigger, right? It's something switches on. It's like, beep, beep, oh, remember, big event. This is a big one. Pay attention because everything changes here. That's why you incarnated here. Activate Starseed Warrior Program. See truth. Go communicate truth. Do stuff, you know, help planet. This is
kick
the thing
butt,
that you
have nervous breakdowns, get attacked.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So I think that the reason which a lot of us had those kind of thoughts on that day is because something inside our own programming, right? And I'm talking multidimensional programming, was very, had already been prepped for this particular sequence, okay? And it was, for many, it was the actual awakening moment. Like, not spiritual awakening necessarily, but awakening to the reality beyond the matrix, right? It was the red pill moment or blue pill.
The outside the box moment.
The outside the box moment, yeah. Even for people that were not that way before, it kind of switched something on. And for a lot of people, it switched things on at a later time. They may have not seen it in real time, but it was investigating 9/11 or hearing about 9/11 in a particular context that made them look into things differently and that then kind of activated them, right? Okay. And just before 9/11 happened, there was a letter that was going around that was saying that September 11th was the day of truth and it was the end of the Egyptian calendar. That was the reason for which, at the time, I was more New Agey and more woo-woo than I am now. And so part of the reason for which I ended up in Mount Shasta was because somebody told me, hey, why don't you come up here to do some ceremony about the Day of Truth? Right? That was what it was called, the Day of Truth. So I was like, okay, you know, I don't know if I can do that. But then a whole series of synchronicities happened and I ended up going with my ex at the time and we had turned it into a holiday and it was kind of fun and we spent time up there. But it was we were working towards this beginning of September, Day of Truth. And then 9/11 happens and the whole truth movement comes out of it, right? Because although 9/11 was the big whopping lie, in some ways it was the lie that made everybody see the lie and go into the truth and to see all of the lies that were told and have been told from then before and after, right? Like it changed, it shifted something. So a lot of people all of a sudden became aware of the fact that there was a lot of lies being told and the reality was not as it seemed and that there were deeper truths unfolding and a lot of cover-ups and a lot of stuff and so on. And from there, we have the truth movement. So I always found it really interesting that this day of truth that was predicted almost, you know, like the eclipse or whatever. It was one of those kind of New Agey days, right? And that's the label that it had. And 9/11 happened and it became this truth trigger on so many levels, right?
Isn't that interesting that the day of truth is expressed the biggest and most obvious lie with a wink almost?
Yes.
Duh. Mm-hmm. Wake up. Hello. Kind of thing, almost, isn't it?
Yes. Well, and the thing is, for us, we see it and it's really obvious, right? But, you know, I was already here in America at that time, and the trauma programming that happened at the time from being attacked, because first of all, remember, Americans are not very used to being attacked because most of Americans' wars are fought somewhere else. So, you know, the Americans have been in a lot of wars, but most of them have not been on American soil. They've been on somebody else's soil. Okay? So,
hang on, can I just say, this sounds very much like the Dr. Mengele trauma programming, where you're love bombed as a very, very early child. And then, like, at some point, you know, the whole support network is taken away from you.
That's a very, very intelligent remark. I agree with that. Yeah, it's a smart remark because it definitely was a piece of programming It definitely was trauma programming. That's why they keep on showing you the footage every year. They try to re-traumatize you with it, right? And the biggest deal at the time was this reawakening of patriotism. You know, how dare you attack America? And now we have to go out and make things right and create another war somewhere else. And there was this, it was very charged, and it was actually not, like now everybody talks about 9/11. The people that do research on 9/11 sometimes are mocked and kind of like, you know, teased as tinfoil hatters and all the rest of it. But it's not violent and virulent. But at the time it was. I remember talking to a woman that I was doing some healing for, and having some comments. I basically, because to me it was clear as day that this was fishy, I just assumed that it was clear as day for everybody else. This was before, the whole truth thing was public domain. I didn't have a truth warrior consciousness at the time. I just was speaking my mind because of what I was seeing. And it seemed obvious to me, so I was verbalizing some of it with this woman. And she basically stood up and said, you're not from this country, you should go home for a start, and don't you dare criticize our president. I said, I wasn't criticizing the president, I was just saying, you know, and she just shut me up and left and slammed the door in my face. And I was like, okay, obviously I can't talk about this. That's not a safe thing to talk about. And the climate at the time was, in terms of talking about these things, there literally was almost like a feeling that you had to hush what you were thinking because it was controversial, right? The whole everything, all of this was a big lie. Now everybody's talking about it, and it's on the internet, it's everywhere, it's on YouTube, do you know what I mean? And people give lectures about it, and it's all fine. But it was harder to talk about it back then. And part of it was because of the trauma-based mind control, because everybody was reacting very emotionally to the event rather than rationally. And that's part of what trauma does. It takes you out of the rational brain, and it puts you into this very reactive emotional brain, right? So people are not thinking straight. When people are traumatized, they don't think straight. They don't see things straight. They don't think straight. And then they're also more prone to allowing somebody else to rescue them, right? So they're also more prone to accepting horrible legislation designed to make them feel safe and so on, like the Patriot Act 1 and 2. And now that has been, it's turned into like the mainstream's MO. Everything is about what is going to keep you safer. It's all root chakra, right? And it's only when you're traumatized that you go to root chakra. When you're traumatized, root chakra is your first priority. Safe. I have to be safe. Right? So what do you need to feel safe? Anything. Anything you can do to make me feel safe. So, very deliberate, this. They know what they're doing. They know how to use mass consciousness. They know how to work with trauma. Obviously, they're experts on trauma because they have been doing trauma-based mind control for the past 50, 60 years, right? If not more than that. Because I have a sense that this trauma-based mind control has been around for a while. Even if, you know, I think it's been around for a while.
The Romans knew about it and the Babylonians knew about it, and you know, I think it's basically what we in the computer trade would call an exploitable hack.
Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. JP, you're full of very big insights today.
Oh, we're deep, baby. We're deep.
Yeah. Very good. So
I think it's also because I've moved the microphone, so I can really come up close to it. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, and Many false flags since, many false flags below that. In some ways, you can look back and start looking at history, and it's all one big false flag, right?
Exactly. I've been learning about the Titanic. Mm-hmm. We hear that the Titanic wasn't even the same ship. It was mm-hmm. another ship, and they've swapped the nameplates over. And so people saw the Titanic when they got on. And, and one of the reasons that there weren't enough lifeboats is because they didn't have enough time to move the lifeboats from the Titanic, which said Titanic on them, to the Olympia, which was slightly damaged. and they swapped it over, and they welded overnight. They swapped the ships over. It's over there. No, it was over there last night. No, there it is. Look, it says there, Titanic. Yeah. So that was one of them, and there are a lot of people who objected to the Federal Reserve.
Oops. Yes.
Anyway, that's not a good thing, because they all died. Funny that. And there were no lifeboats, and you know, it was a big cock up, really. But it was a false flag.
So you're saying that the lot of people that were against the Federal Reserve all ended up on the fake Titanic?
It seems that way. Yeah, they're all coming, and the dude Rothschild or Rockefeller, he cancelled at the last minute. He was like, you know, obviously not going.
Right. Yeah, so he's like the people that didn't show up on 9/11 to work because
That's
they were
right.
given the stay home, right?
That's right.
Also, the thing about 9/11 that is also interesting, and you're familiar with Judy Wood and her work, right, on 9/11?
Yep.
Okay. Judy Wood, she's the beams weapons person, right? And she's
I mean, because one of my guests also talks about the beam that there was a cross beam, and get this, all right, there's Judy Wood, right, and this guy takes it even further, right? That it was broadcast from Guam, and bounced off a reflective surface that was created by three round vehicles. Three anti-gravity military vehicles that formed a mirror that shone it, reflected it down into the core of the buildings, and that this beam would take the even-numbered elements like iron and teleport them to a time domain. I'm just trying to say this as literally as he said it.
Right, interesting.
And what that did is that the rest of it would be powder, because it's like beaming all the iron and all the carbon and all the silicon out of the structure of the building, which is like most of it. So
yes.
It basically, but it was like a scanning beam. So it needed two beams for this to happen. It was basically, I made the analogy, it was like rewriting reality like you rewrite a memory stick.
Yes.
And here's the thing, because there was a teleport, right? So they teleported a beam reflector, or they teleported a beam onto the barge, which scanned up and down the building and then teleported back.
Interesting.
There is a pyramid-shaped object on a barge that appears and disappears.
Yeah, there's definitely something of that kind. Did go on. If you look, I actually really like the work that Judy Wood has done. You know, let's say that she hasn't got it right as to exactly what they did, and
she's on the right track.
She's on the right track in terms of the evidence. She's on the right track because one of the things that she did was that she actually collected a whole bunch of pictures of the crime scene. That is basically, because it's a crime scene, right? Like an event happened, you want to see what happened. So what she did is just put together a whole bunch of evidence, picture evidence, video evidence, and all the rest of it, and as a scientist, she's looking at this evidence and she's seeing that there's a lot of stuff, weird stuff that's going down here that doesn't follow through with the official story. One of the things that doesn't follow through is, where's all this powder coming from? And that's what you're talking about, right? Like, maybe they extracted the iron out of it. But whatever it is that it was, there was a dustification process. She calls it dustification, right? Things turn to dust. If you look at the videos, you can see it. If you look at the antenna that is on top of this building, on one of the buildings, there was an antenna. This antenna disintegrates in thin air, and you can see it on the video. Also, one of the things that I never really thought about until she mentioned it, because that's how it is sometimes, you know, you don't really think about stuff until somebody points it out. Then somebody points it out, and then you see it, right?
Yes, indeed.
There were no bodies. Where were the bodies? You know, you think about 3,000 people dead. Well, that should be a whole bunch of corpses, right? If it's a building that just collapsed on itself and all these people are in it, shouldn't there be a whole bunch of mangled dead people in the middle of the rubble? Well, there isn't. The biggest thing that is in the rubble, because most of the rubble is not even rubble, but it's dust. The biggest thing that's in there is a piece of a telephone keypad, because everything was turned to dust. So either the people were not in there to begin with, which sounds completely insane, but not that insane after things like Sandy Hook. Either there were no people in there to begin with, or if they were, something pulverized them so that there was no pieces of people anywhere, right? You know, somebody's arm or somebody's leg or whatever. It was just dust. Now, that is...
Apart from the people who were jumping out the side of the building.
That's right. Those are the people. So you did see the
but
people
did,
there.
Did we actually see their corpses?
Well, we didn't see any corpses. And if this is the thing with modern kind of journalism, the only corpses that you see are the ones that they want you to see, like dead Gaddafi or dead fake Osama. You know, when they want you to believe that somebody's really dead, right, then they'll drag out some fake corpse, even if it's a mummy, a dummy, like the LAX shooter wasn't even real, right? He was like a dummy with a bunch of tomato sauce on the side. So they do occasionally show you somebody that they want you to see dead, but in a lot of these events, there's an absence of dead bodies, right? And 9/11 is no exception from that point of view. If we accept that the people that were jumping out of the buildings were real, which I'm not saying that they weren't, all the other ones turned to dust. And they turned to dust why? Because there was some of this exotic beams technology that was being used. And I'm pretty convinced that is true. If you're not convinced that it is true, go and have a look at Judy Wood's website and all of the photographic evidence that she has on there. It's quite interesting. Also, the other thing that she has that is really interesting and that does not show up in mainstream media is what she calls the toasty cars, which are basically a whole bunch of cars that are either flipped over or, they're both flipped over and completely rusted. So, and they're not just flipped over and rusted right in the block of 9/11, but they're flipped over and rusted for several blocks out. Okay? Not every single one, and in fact, it's not every single car, but there's like a pattern of like half a parking lot that is turned upside down and rusted and the other half isn't, you know, things like that. So again, suggests that there was a directed beam of some kind that affected some pieces and didn't affect others, but where it was affected, the effect that it had on the cars was of super fast rusting, and somehow the cars got turned upside down, right?
Well, this is consistent with I'm just going to try and pull up a periodic table of the elements,
right.
Because there we are. What we're looking for is the odd numbered elements. Here we go. Carbon, silicon, geranium, tin, lead. They would go, and then we have oxygen. Oh, that wouldn't be good. sulfur, selenium, terrium, polonium, no. And then down with the gut, copper, silver, and gold. They would remain. Interesting. Zinc and cadmium and mercury would go. Now, where's iron? Iron is 26. Yeah, so iron, chromium, titanium, calcium, magnesium. So, yeah, your bones would go, calcium and magnesium. Yeah. Carbon, mm-hmm. your muscles, your cellular structure would disappear. Silicon, that's all that's left, boom. That would go too. So basically, they teleport half of you to somewhere else.
Yeah.
And not a nice way to die.
Well, maybe one doesn't know when he's being vaporized. I don't know. So the guy that you were talking to was saying that all of the elements above iron were getting
Even numbered elements.
Yeah. Okay.
There's this whole thing about oscillation and rotation. Oscillation, rotation.
I would like to, if you have that interview somewhere, because I would like to hear that. Okay, to see
sure
that sounds like an interesting theory. I would like to see it. But however they did it, something of this kind I think happened. You know. I don't know if it was exactly this theory or not. Do you know what I mean? Who knows, right? But something of this kind happened that created some kind of dustification of the buildings. And in terms of the actual reasons for which one can see that this is the case, Judy Wood's stuff is pretty good on almost doing the forensic. Do you know what I mean? She's got good forensics on it. And the guy that you're talking about sounds very interesting also. So a lot of strange stuff, right? And the more you look into all of these events, the more strange stuff we seem to find. And, it's kind of interesting in some ways to see how our reality, so much of our reality, is actually manipulated or not real. And it's especially interesting when you start looking into the past, because we're kind of used to it now that at least the stuff that happened post 9/11, we can see, of course, you know, that's how they do it. And that they, but my sense is that often now when you look at the past, you can see, well, all of these manipulations were actually happening even back then, we just couldn't see it. And one of the places where, to me, that pops out the most is when you look at music. You go and see a video by Innocuous Gilbert O'Sullivan singing Alone Again Naturally, and he's got a big grand piano in the middle of a Masonic floor. And he's dressed in black and white with the white, he's dressed in black and white, the piano is black, the floor is white and black, big stripes all around it. It's total Masonic symbolism all the way through it. When I looked at that stuff some years ago, I didn't even see that, right? So even in the 60s and in the 70s, this whole, like, we're used to seeing the Illuminati symbolism in the videos now. And we think it's recent, but it's not. It was there even back then. The Beatles have occult symbols, covers. But there's other bands as well. And there's somebody on Facebook, I can't remember their name now, that has been putting together photographs from the 50s and the 40s, where all of that stuff is already in there. So yep. It's been going on for a while, right? Does it mean indeed Everybody's in on it? Not always. Does it mean Gilbert O'Sullivan is Illuminati? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he's just an artist, right? But the context in which they put these artists, that's been there for quite a long time.
I'm my mind is drawn to thinking about Eyes Wide Shut and the guy who was taken to play the piano.
Yes. And did he know who he was?
He was told to play the piano and play the piece, and not look.
Don't look and don't remember.
That's right.
I don't think, especially in the 60s and so on, I don't think every single person that was doing what they were doing knew exactly what they were doing. I think sometimes they're just placed into context, right? But definitely it was already going on. And then as on the music front, when you look back at some of those kind of things, it's actually kind of sad. It's like, I really used to like the Beatles before I realized that they're completely Tavistock occult. Do you know what I mean? Like, the more you look into the Beatles, the more it's undeniable what is going on there, right?
That's right. I think it's what they call the archonic overlay. Is that you get this, you know, you get somebody with just pure raw talent like Paul McCartney or Lennon, and then you kill them and you force replacements in there because they're not playing the game. And then, you know, it's like the goose that laid the golden egg suddenly doesn't want to lay its eggs anymore. Actually, it sounds like one of my chickens. The chicken that laid the white egg, you know. I'm only getting brown eggs. I might. She just might explode. I don't know what happens. It's a very interesting natural process. Well, but she's just very grumpy. And
are you taking away all of her eggs?
I don't know if they're her eggs. Okay. I don't know, because there's another layer, and I don't know where she's laying her eggs either. So there might be a little stack of eggs somewhere else, you know.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, you know, if maybe she's attached to them and doesn't want them to be taken.
Exactly. And so I've decided I'm going to build...
I'm not going to play anymore. That's it. Because every time I lay one of these, you take it away. So that's it.
Sorry, game of soldiers. Let me sit on this thing. I like to sit on it. I like that feeling. All right. Maybe I should let her sit for a day.
Let her have fun. Just let her have one, so it becomes a chick. Then they have one.
Right. I'm afraid, my dear, that will never happen.
Never happen. Mm-hmm.
No, because you need a cock.
Right,
cockerel.
And you're going to get one of those.
And there aren't any around here. Thankfully.
Well, that's why the chicken is frustrated. That's why you have a frustrated chicken.
Yeah, I think that's a sort of generalized energy around here, maybe. I don't know, that's what's going on. But it's May, you know. Well, it was May, it's now June. Is it June already? Jesus, June.
It's June, yeah. June.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so, you know, really, I mean, that stuff's going on all over the place, and people are out in festivals and doing their thing, and there she is sitting in a little box. Little box for a straw. So I've decided I'm going to build another box for the other chicken, so that she has somewhere to sit and brood.
Right, it's good.
Quiet little.
Great.
Yes, racist chickens. Yeah, so this is the thing, the archonic overlay. Meanwhile, back on topic of whatever topic we were on.
Sorry.
But the archonic overlay, where they take something that's beautiful and then... they they slap a contract on it, you know, and then they use that organically created from the inside and stylize it and make it into a style, make it into a fashion, whereas the person who started out in the first place doing it just because they felt like putting on a green sock and a red sock, you know, have their their ideas, you know, ripped to hell. They end up as heroin addicts and die a sad death.
Yep. So in your understanding, since we're talking Beatles, swapping notes with you on the one that was replaced was just Paul, right? Like, it's my understanding.
in the first iteration of this, yes.
Okay, and do you also believe that John was replaced?
No, I think John was organic. I think it's just because watching Penny Lane. I don't know when if he was replaced. When would he have been replaced?
No, there's some people out there that believe that he was replaced. I don't. I think he's organic also. But I was just because we haven't talked about this. I wanted to see where you were at with it. Do you think that John actually embraced the, the kind of dark occult iconic overlay, at least initially?
I think that's, one of the things that he was dual. I think there was partly he wanted to go along with it, but partly he didn't, and that's why he got so cynical. That's why he had this love-hate relationship about it, because, again, talking about Arconic Overlay, the Paul McCartney replaced by Fall, William Campbell, was an Arconic Overlay for sure, and he's definitely, what I think they did is, I think they mind-controlled him. They created Paul McCartney as an altar that could be activated by whoever. Maybe they gave John the key, I don't know.
Right, yeah, that's possible. There's a lot of really interesting footage of Fall slipping up on stuff, right, where although he may have been an altar, at least now, most definitely he's aware. Because there's a lot of stuff out there where he says that he has to be this dual persona. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's aware of his own switching, right? So, but even that can make sense because, as we know, programming breaks down around 30 years old. That is one of the reasons which they kill everybody before they get there, right? Like, how many people are disposed of around in their late 20s? That's why they
Club
call it
27.
That's right. The reason for that is because that's the age at which their programming starts to break down. And if they don't want any glitches, very often they'll get rid of the person around that time. They will plan their exit. They will plan how that person exits so that they're gone before their programming starts to break down. If you read Transformation of America, Kathy O'Brien talks about that a lot of the kind of like more run-of-the-mill MK Ultra slaves would be used for sacrifice or, as fodder during things like Bohemian Grove, do you know what I mean? So that because before their programming got broken down, they kind of got disposed of in that way, right? So he could have been programmed and then become conscious, but he's conscious in a dark way. And who knows what his ex-wife had found out in some kind of basement. I always get the feeling that she was like one of the wives of Beelzebub. Do you remember that story? Bluebeard. It wasn't Beelzebub, it was Bluebeard. Bluebeard had this basement in which bad stuff happened, and one of the wives found out. Because she found the secret door. I always get this vision with what's her name? It's not Linda. Linda was the first one. What's the second wife that he had?
Oh, Heather Mills. I've got a secret box.
That's right.
I saw a thing about Heather Mills. She's quite a character. quite
Heather
a character
Mills
indeed.
Stepped onto something. Heather Mills stepped onto something. It's like she found something, stepped onto something, and then they had to shut her up. That's my sense about her. She discovered Fall's secret. And my sense is that she discovered more than just the Fall piece, but she discovered some of the satanic aspect as well. And then they had to give her a lot of money to shut her up, right?
Yeah, and they labeled her the gold digger and all this stuff, and yep. You know, mm-hmm. Paul, Sir Paul. Oh yeah, Sir Paul, he's so good, Sir Paul. Think of the children. Yeah, no. Yes, getting creepier by the minute. And oh yeah, Sir Paul, and he's. See, my theory is that Heather Mills is the daughter of the woman who was in the car when Paul was killed. This is my personal theory. Mm-hmm. And that she was in a witness protection situation. Actually, this mm-hmm. Could be pretty easy to research because we need, you know, just need to find out a bit about who Heather Mills' mum was.
Okay, so why would Paul would have married her?
Right, like, well, because of blackmail, because he would, the same reason that, and she would have found this out as well, the same reason that she married, that he married Linda in the first place. Do you know the story of that?
No, I don't.
All right, well, it's a good one, because you got to watch the footage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because if you watch the footage of Linda and Paul just after they got married, if you could say restrain your apathy, oh, we found it, we got there. Hey, this is the. If you could say restrain your apathy, this would be the epitome of it, because they're going like, oh yeah, we're terribly excited,
really?
Terribly, terribly excited, really yeah. Not very excited at all, incredibly restrained apathy, and. So here's the story, right? Okay, so Linda Eastman is a photographer-ess in the 60s, and she was a rock photographer. She took photographs of rock stars being rock stars, and it was the 60s, and everything was starting, and it was all cool. And so what happened was that she was taking photos of all the bands, Rolling Stones, and all that, and all that, and all that. And she's developing the photos from the Beatles, and so I reckon, you know, I know faces, and this guy is not that guy. So it's like kind of, there's John, yeah, there's Ringo, there's George, and who's that? Well, that must be Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day she confronted him and said, you're not who you say you are you? Now, the problem was that they all signed the Official Secrets Act, and the Official Secrets Act penalty for revealing the official secret is official death. And you die in a car accident, or some nutter comes along and stabs you, or shoots you, or garrots you, or, you know, offs you.
Yeah, which is interesting, because all of these things happen to every single member of that band eventually.
Indeed. Right? Indeed. Mm-hmm. Right? Apart from Ringo, who is terrified. We know that Ringo is terrified. Please do not talk to Ringo.
Ringo is not going to ever talk about anything, because he knows otherwise he is bye-bye.
Yeah. Wait till Ringo gets terminal cancer, right? And when Ringo gets terminal cancer, actually he's pretty long-lived. Perhaps it's because he doesn't, you know, think much. Bless his heart. But anyway, drummers, love them. Anyway...
end of the storm.
Anyway, so here we are. But the penalty is death. So Paul at that moment said to his handlers, you know, she knows the secret, and I know that if she were to tell, that you guys would off her, right? So she's quite nice. So she said, marry me and make me a rock star, or I'll tell the world. So he chose the former. And you know where that led? Don't we?
Mm-hmm.
It led to Wings. I was thinking today, actually, there's one Wings song I really liked at the time, and it was Jet.
The only Wings song that I actually remember is Ebony and Ivory.
Oh my god. Well, there we go now. Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney.
Harmony. Sorry?
She's away.
My song.
Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Wacko Jacko, as he was affectionately known in The Sun. You know, another, we know, a victim of mind control and abuse and beatings and false personalities and stuff like that. But he was coming out with the truth before they killed him.
Absolutely. And then they killed him. Mm-hmm. Now, first of all, they tried to discredit him and try to make him into a pedophile, which who knows if he was or not, because if he was mind-controlled, he could have been a pedophile on some level, right? Because of all of the strange stuff that happened to him. There is a natural compulsion to repeat trauma. So sometimes that's why people that are abused end up abusing their kids very often. So I'm not saying that it's impossible that he, you know, he could have had some pedophile type stuff going on with him. He could have had an alter that was still doing that kind of stuff, but regardless of that, they're all doing it, and he's the one that got hung out to dry, right? So first of all, they tried to take him down that way, and then when that didn't work, eventually they took him out. But he knew they were going to take him out. He was aware of it. He knew it. One of the last videos that he did you see it? The one with the panther, where he goes around smashing everything?
No. Are you aware of this? No? So what happened?
Okay. It's actually really good. I'm trying to think where you could see it. There's the... it was part of that series on YouTube that is called The Music Industry Exposed, but you can find it as a video by itself as well. Music Industry Exposed, it has 11... chapters. It's really worth watching. It will take you a couple of hours, but it's worth it. Okay? And
so repeat that again.
It's called The Music Industry the Industry Exposed, or The Music Industry Exposed. There's various ones out there, but this one has only 11 chapters. There's another one out there that has like a gazillion chapters. It's not the same one. The one that I'm talking about has only 11 videos in it, and it's called The Music Industry Exposed. Very professionally done, and I believe that whoever put it up there is somebody that is talking from inside the industry. It's almost like a whistleblower.
Is that from Farhad Khan?
That's Farhad Khan.
There, I'll The Music Industry Exposed, in brackets, full length. I'll just paste that into the chat room.
Yeah, it's one of the best exposés of the music industry, and I am convinced that this dude, I don't know if that is his real name that he's posting under, but I'm convinced this person is an insider. I think he is talking from the inside, because some of the things that are in that video are common knowledge now, but they were not when this guy put out this video at first. And it's an intuitive thing. I think this guy is inside the industry and talking from inside the industry, he's not one of us piecing together type people. I think he's a leaker, okay? Somebody that's leaking out stuff. So in there is a piece about Michael Jackson, which is a very worthwhile watch. It's towards the end, the Michael Jackson thing. And there's a video that was one of the last ones that Michael Jackson did, which is actually, he claims, the one that made the music industry inside, claims that that video was made as a message from Michael Jackson to the Illuminati. It wasn't, you know, he was telling them basically to go screw themselves, right? And in that video, he starts off as a panther, and then he shapeshifts in Michael Jackson. And then he does a whole series of moves. And then he gradually goes around and smashes all of these Illuminati symbols and various things around him. And kind of, that's almost like his. And very soon after that, he died. Okay?
Yeah, because you don't leave. It's like Bob Dylan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's just go there for a second. Bob Dylan was recently given some Medal of Freedom.
Okay.
He always talks about, I shall be released.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's talking about the deal with the devil. I think he's trying to get away with the deal with the devil.
Yeah, absolutely. That weighs very heavy on him. that with the Bob Dylan.
Mm.
There's that interview in which he says that he made this deal, and you can tell the energy around him is like, he's like somebody that gets sent to the 8th tour in Iraq. He wants to get out. He doesn't want to do this thing anymore. He wants to be released, right? But for whatever reason, he can't. For whatever reason, because whatever piece of blackmail they have on him or whatever it is that's going to happen to him if he does not do that, obviously is too big for him to take that risk and exit. But he's somebody that wants to exit. Right? He's done. My sense is that the only way that he gets released is if he dies. Right? Like natural death or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll die a very natural death soon.
He will.
Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I guarantee that within a year.
Because that's his announcement.
Yeah, because he's just been given his freedom. He was given a medal by Obama. It's really like pantomime. Really, like Wizard of Oz. You know, mm-hmm. Here's your medal, Bob. Sorry, wrong accent. Anyway. Thanks very much, Mr. President. So,
yeah, poor people on some level, huh?
I mean, they're totally trapped in their thing. Now, here's the thing: is it one of these things that if you believe it, it's real, or is it really a contract and can it be broken?
It's real.
Can it be released? Can you actually be released from a contract with the devil?
Yes, you can. You can be released from it, but it's real. When I've had a lot of clients over the past couple of years, 2 or 3 years, who are reincarnated now, but had not just clients, just people that have come into my life. But who have done that in past lives, who have made that kind of pact, right, in past lives, and literally pieces of their soul are missing. It's not, you can't sell your whole soul to the devil. That's not possible, right? And also, we have to be clear about what the devil is anyway. I mean, the devil is not one creature that you sell your soul to. What you're selling your soul to is the Dark Soul Collective, right? Like, you align with the Dark Soul Collective. The Dark Soul Collective is basically the group soul that is aligned with the dark side. Okay? Somebody has to be dark. Alright? Somebody has to play dark. I know that's a strange thing to think, that somebody actually has to be dark for the polarity worlds to exist. It doesn't mean that it doesn't let people off the hook. It doesn't make it okay to be dark or whatever. But it's a reality that darkness is part of the polarity worlds. You don't have free will without the option to go dark. You don't, do you know what I mean? Like, there's testing and lessons that require some kind of dark to overcome, right? So, it does serve a purpose on some level, but when a person is on their way back from that and they want to exit, they can claim back their soul, and you can do it metaphysically, you can do it literally as a piece of energy work. There's a piece of energy work that can be done to bring back pieces of the soul. It's not always straightforward, because sometimes there's big opposition in doing that, so you have to first do a battle with the whole dark energy thing, right? So it has its own little danger thing attached to it. But the... not always, though. Sometimes it's easy. But yeah, you can, it's not a permanent thing unless the person wants it to be so. Now, the thing that is coming to me, though, is that what is permanent about it is the intent. Say, for example, that you did that because your intent is that you want a lot of money and you want to bang a lot of chicks, okay? Or you want to be really famous. Or, you know, you want the ego strokes that come from being really famous. Or you want to be like a billionaire. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got your own motivations for which sure, take my soul, I don't care. Do you think Beyonce is not sleeping at night because she doesn't have a piece of her soul? She doesn't care. Do you know what I mean? She wants to be Beyonce, right? Whoever is in Beyonce now, because one of the things that comes with the package of selling your soul is that you then become a host, okay? So in some ways you're selling more your body than your soul because you become a host, right? So the thing about selling your soul, it's a contract where you are swearing allegiance to the dark side. That means you're dark aligned. That means that as part of the process, you will also often accept entities and various kinds of entities to take over and be in your field, which is what we see with Beyonce, which is what we see with Nicki Minaj, that is what we see with... who else has got entities that are really visible? Let me think.
Is J-Lo? She's talked about that.
Maybe, yeah. J-Lo, I'm sure that she has them. I'm trying to think, there's somebody else. Oh, yeah. What's her name?
Thingy.
Miley Cyrus.
That's the one.
Okay. Miley Cyrus, most definitely, right? Like there's some switching going on. So there's some of them where it's really kind of plain as day, and other ones it doesn't show quite so strongly, right? Somebody that has gone through that process very recently is this girl that did this video that is called Opulence, and her name is Brooke Candy, I think. Now, if you ever
they always have that programming name in there.
Yep.
Oh, trigger words.
If you go and have a look at Brooke Candy before and now, like before she was just doing these kind of like stripper rap videos. They were tacky, but they were not full-blown Illuminati programming, right? Like it was there, but it wasn't full-blown Lady Gaga style. Do you know what I mean? But then she does this video that is called Opulence, which you may want to check out. And in that one, it's full blown in Illuminati programming, full blown. And obviously she's gone up a level. As part of going up a level, she has to take in an entity. And in the video, they show you that. They show you that she crashes in the car, her car goes up in flames, and when she comes out, she's this creature. So they actually tell you, they show you. They did that with Beyonce as well. Beyonce has a video that is her initiation video in which she's in the car with Jay-Z. She gets out of the car. The car blows up. Then, she's still in the car. The car blows up. She comes out. And when she comes out, she is Sasha Fierce. Okay? So is Sasha Fierce Beyonce? No. Sasha Fierce is a demonic entity that's working through Beyonce, but because Beyonce agrees. So the soul-selling thing goes along with the voluntary possession thing. Not always, but it often seems to go hand in hand, right? Can they get rid of these things once they decide? Another one is Eminem when he was Slim Shady. Is Slim Shady? I don't think Slim Shady is an alter. Slim Shady is a demonic being, okay? They can get rid of these things if they make a 180 on their intent. And also, if they are willing to endure whatever it is that the dark forces want to do to keep them put. So very often they can do the 180 on the intent, but then the dark forces will kill them, put them into prison, start talking smack about their name, right? So if you have a look at DMX, for example, he was arrested a bunch of times, but he was arrested a bunch of times after he converted to Christianity and started saying that the music industry was evil. So all of a sudden, he starts getting arrested for drug charges all over the place, right? So he had to, but somehow he managed. And I believe that he managed because he is very strong faith and he kind of got protected through his own faith. He became protected, right? Because anybody that makes a true connection with God, Source, a true connection, it doesn't matter what religion you're doing that through, what belief system or whatever, you can have a truly source-connected New Ager. You can have a truly source-connected Christian. You can have a truly source-connected Muslim. You can have all... It doesn't matter if the connection that a person is making to source is true and authentic. It can come through with different dressing, right? Like, it can come through different belief systems. But if the person is truly aiming to go to source, they will get there, okay? And with DMX, that is what he did. He's a rapper, by the way, for people that don't know. He's a rapper that did a 180 on the music industry. He became extremely vocal. He was very aware of the satanic angle. He spoke very publicly about it. And, you know, for a short while, his career went down the toilet. They tried to shame him, smear him in all sorts of ways. But somehow he managed. And I believe he managed because he had extremely strong spiritual faith, which at the end of it has extremely strong protection, right? But a lot of them end up in dead. They may get their soul back, but they end up dead, right? So very often what happens is that the person can take their soul back in another lifetime, but they can... But to do that, they have to change their orientation. The first requirement to getting your soul back is that your orientation has to be towards the light. If your orientation is not towards the light, if you sold out because you got duped and tricked, that's one thing. And people like Eminem or DMX, they kind of got seduced, right? But then they realized that was not such a great idea. So when that is the case, definitely you can do that. You may lose your life, your physical life, doing it, but you can definitely get your soul back, okay? But you may end up dead. But in terms of as an energetic thing in another life, you can definitely get your soul back. Does that make sense, what I'm talking about?
So yeah, the trick is talking in the thing. Dolly was asking, so I'm wondering if the light forces will help them away from the dark forces if they're serious about getting away.
Absolutely.
And Trixie said, that's my contract, you know, they all got to vacate the premises.
Absolutely. It's if that is what I mean by DMX having the super faith, right? That guy really means it. That guy got into warrior mode with the dark side. He was like, I'm totally out of here. I don't... Do you know what I mean? Maybe from a spiritual perspective, we can also see this as a test of courage, right? And courage and conviction. Because people that get seduced for the dark side have something in them that allows that seduction to occur, right? Unless it's a full-blown blackmail thing, but it often isn't. Often it's a carrot that gets dangled. You want money? Just sign here. You want women? You sign here. You want fame? You sign here. You want your name to be remembered in the annals of the future? Sign on here. You want privilege to go wherever it is that you want to go? Sign on dotted line. You want life extension? Here it is. Do you know what I mean? It's always something that is, it's a temptation of some kind of a seduction that gets put forward. People of true moral integrity, spiritual integrity, whatever you want to call it, don't get seduced. They say, no, thank you. And I think that that is, you know, in the gospel, when Jesus goes out into the wilderness, you know, be it historical Jesus or mythological Jesus, doesn't matter, but it's a story of temptation. He goes out into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights in theory to just eat berries and drink, breathe prana, right? And the devil, dark side, whatever, comes up and says, what are you doing out here in the desert? You're the son of God. What are you doing out here, you know, eating berries and breathing prana? You are omnipotent, you're the son of God, and you know, if you come with me, I can give you all, everything that you want. I can give you all the power in the world. I can give you this, I can give you that. And that was the test, right? That's the test, the seduction of the dark side, right? It's an initiation. And so the Jesus being says, no, I'm not doing that. because that's how you pass that test. How you pass that test is that you say no. But there's a lot of people that do not pass that test, and that they say yes, right? They say, sure, that's all you want is my soul, that's fine. Or I just have to host a demon, that's fine, I don't care. As long as I get all of these things that you told me that you want to give me, I'll sign on a dotted line. Now, there's consequences to selling oneself out, and we all have aspects of our lives in which we have the potential to sell ourselves out. We all do, right? It can be over a relationship. I want the safety and security of being married to somebody that can pay my bills. You know how many women make that deal? Right? Where it's like, you know, as long as there can be this guy that can pay my bills and all the rest of it, it doesn't matter if my spiritual growth stops and I no longer take risks in my life and, you know, and I don't, and I'm not happy and I'm not really into him that much and all the rest of it. But as long as my safety and security is taken care of, I will continue to be in this sucky situation. That is also a test, a temptation, right? It's also selling out. There's so many different ways in which we can sell out. Some of them are really, really obvious and glaring, that are these, you know, real dark side type sellouts. But there are small sellouts in every aspect of our lives. In some ways, every day we have the opportunity to choose a sellout experience or an integrity experience, right? And the thing that determines, in a way, if we are light beings, true light beings inside of ourselves or not, is determined by the accumulation of the choices that we make, because none of us are perfect. So we're all going to have moments in which we choose the lower road. But then if we're smart, we go back on that and think, hey, hang on a minute, I just chose a low road. Or 3 months ago, I chose a low road. Or last year, I chose a low road and didn't quite realize that. Let me rectify that. So you can go back on your choices and you can rectify them and get yourself back on track, right? And usually when you do that, your life gets happier. It may be that it gets harder in some ways, because often the high road choices are not the easiest choices. Sometimes they're the ones that will force us to stretch, they force us to go out of our comfort zone, you know, they force us to grow, they force us to let go of addictions, they force us to let go of the safety net, do you know what I mean, and all these kind of things. So they're not always the easiest choices, but they're almost always the ones that end up feeding you at a deeper level. So eventually they make you into a stronger, better person and a happier person, but it's not always an instant gratification kind of path, right? So we all have these opportunities to choose light, choose dark, choose growth, choose death, choose sellout, choose truth and integrity. In every tiny little thing that we do every day, there's some micro version of that, right? And that, in some ways, is part of what being here and being on this planet is actually about. It's about the choices that we make and the consequences of those choices, which is another way of talking about karma, right? Karma is about the consequence of one's choices. It's the feedback loop that tells us if we're on track or not. And is the feedback loop also that makes us rebalance out all the times in which we have not been on track, mostly for the purpose of learning, so that we can learn from those experiences and find ways of doing them better, right?
Find ways of doing them better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's always a good way.
Yep, just do it once, then do it again. Until it feels okay, right?
Well, they'll poke you there until it stops hurting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah, anyway.
It's a trial and error school.
Yeah, because there's no manual.
No. It's the trial and error school. You do it. So, I mean, even people like Beyonce, right? Let's say Beyonce, even assuming that we actually really know who she is, because who knows who Beyonce is beyond what we see, do you know what I mean?
Ever so, Beyonce.
That's ever Beyonce, yes. So, let's say that she's totally dedicated to being Dark Forces channel, fake pregnancy, bad role model for girls, Illuminati priestess, okay? Let's say that she's totally happy with that, all fulfilled for a moment with her deal. Next lifetime, stuff may happen to her as a result of these choices that will be set up so that there's a rebalancing of that. Okay? It's not punishment, it's consequence. Does that make sense? It's like, it's not punishment, it's not that that happens because it's punishment, but it's like, very often there's energy set in place as consequence that then comes back at the person. And then after a while, the person smacks the wall enough times that they correct course, and they correct course voluntarily. They correct course because they want to, not because they're forced to. And then there's stuff, the whole journey all in itself brings learning and progression and expansion of the soul, right? And that is ultimately the whole purpose of all of it, right?
So, okay.
we've gone from inner city schools to the soul.
That's right, because that's where it comes from. Because here we are, we incarnate into these places, mm-hmm. so they say, so we keep being told. We've decided this, as you were saying, you know, we come from the future, we incarnate and become humans, and do what we do, you know, mm-hmm. And we may be from different existences, you know. So some of us may be intelligent cats from the future. Some of us might be intelligent dolphins or something like that, you know. And so we have, we inject ourselves at the appropriate point or mm-hmm. the inappropriate point, depending on how, I mean, because it is a bit of a Keystone Cops thing. It's not really all kind of really organized. Let's put it that way. It's more of a kind of, hey, you guys, it's not the Bundy Ranch. It's not even as good as the Bundy Ranch.
It's like, hey, you're needed over here. We're not quite sure how it will go, but go. Right? Yeah. The only problem is that it's an inject thing, but it's not an eject thing, right? Like, once you're here, you're stuck. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we won't talk about it. But it's just, you know, we have to make out, you know, make it bearable, and you know, stop them from killing each other, and that's fine. Yeah, that's good enough. I think that's a very good kind of baseline objective for the day.
Yes.
If we can do that on a planetary scale, then everything would be better. Ms. Galanti mm-hmm. is here in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There was a question. Hang on, somebody asked a question. I'm just winding back oh God, where is it? It was about crystals. That was it in blue? Let's see. Is it in blue? Was it? There was there's a question. I'll ask this one first, and then I'll find the other one. Does Katie have any ideas on who or what is capable of doing a planetary reset of time? On you go. Any ideas?
The galaxy is trying at the moment, right? They think the the galactic consciousness itself, not the Galactic Federation, I'm talking about the galaxy itself, is trying to do that. Galaxy is conscious. Galaxy is doing the switching. Right? So, in terms of there are grand consciousnesses out there that are capable of doing all sorts of things, even things like vaporizing a planet. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that hard to get rid of a planet if you want to, and it's not impossible to reset stuff on a planet, which, by the way, has happened on a regular basis on this planet. Things have been reset and reshuffled many times. Right. The thing is, though, that it's not just about that. It's also about, are you allowed to do something? There's things that can be done, but is one allowed to do something without karmic repercussion? So the question, in some way, should be not so much who can do it, but under what circumstances certain things can be done. The Earth plane is a school. It's a duality world. Where souls incarnate to experience certain things. Now, this duality world was supposed to evolve, and they've been trying, evolve and continue to go forward, right? It's kind of been stuck for a little bit because the dark has gone it's become too good at doing the dark thing and at manipulating everything. So now everybody's so manipulated that every time a ship comes around, it doesn't happen. Okay. So the purpose this time around was to support in having a positive shift experience here, which I believe is going to happen, by the way. And in fact, in some ways, it's already has happened, even if it may take some years to see the results of that on the physical plane. In the light dark energy war that has been going on for quite some time, the light is winning on the consciousness streams, the light is stronger, okay? But that doesn't mean that all of the structures of the world are not taken over by the dark side, right? Like, so we will only truly experience a different Earth once that has trickled down to the 3D, to the physical level, not to 3D level, but the physical level. And when we start to see different structures, different kinds of governments, different kinds of education, different kinds of medicine, different kinds of government, and so on. Now, we already have the different kinds of medicine, but it's not mainstream. We already have the different kinds of education, but they're not mainstream. Different kind of politics? Maybe. But that is, in some ways, the rulership of the world is the one thing, I think, that it's a bit of a scratchy in the head kind of thing, because how are we going to do it? It's not super clear how you create enlightened government. There is a need for government. It's just there to, as an organizing principle, right? It's, we need some leadership organizing principle.
Administrative and representative.
Administrative, representative, but also for decisions, because a lot of people don't do decisions, right? Like, if you have to decide about something and you've got a big group of people, there is a place for leadership in that, okay? But it has to be enlightened leadership, not corrupt, take everybody down kind of leadership. It has to be leadership that is about the whole, that is selfless, that is for the benefit of the group, that has everybody's best interest in mind, right? But we don't have that kind of leadership. We don't. We have not experienced enlightened leadership on this planet, I don't believe, right? Every kind of thing that we associate with leadership or government or whatever has some kind of negative spin in it, because pretty much we have only experienced that. I know, feel intuitively, that there is a way of doing leadership that is enlightened and different. We don't have any models for it yet. It hasn't emerged yet. Maybe at the end of Pluto in Capricorn it will emerge, because that is what Pluto in Capricorn is supposed to do. Pluto in Capricorn is about transforming the Capricorn energy, that is the leadership government thing. How do you transform it? First of all, you kill what's there, right? You expose what's there, then you kill what's there. And that's the process that we're in. We're not even halfway through Capricorn yet. The Pluto in Capricorn is going to take until 2024, I believe, to complete. And right now, Pluto's at 13 Capricorn. That's as far as it's gone. We haven't even reached the half point of Pluto in Capricorn.
So that's only 10 years, 2024.
10 years. Pluto in Capricorn started in 2008. Okay. And so we are, 6 years in? Okay. And we have another 10 to go. Okay.
Lovely. So 6 years in and 10 years to go. So we're not even halfway. And it's really, it's like an enormous kind of steel roller, like a crushing roller, mm-hmm. that we're all being forced underneath. So we have to go 2D. What a dimensional transmogrification that is.
That's right.
To be turned from a 3D person to a 2D person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Pluto in Capricorn energy, I'm talking astrologies right now. Pluto is the grand transformer. It's a death rebirth type of transformer. Very often it will intensify something before it implodes it, right? So if there's a pattern, the pattern gets stronger and then it will hit a wall and it will shift, right? So Capricorn is the, at the mundane level, is the government, authority, leadership, all of those kind of things. So Pluto and Capricorn, first of all, will make that go, will intensify it, right? As it intensifies, everybody around is saying, oh no, this is not good. This is intensifying. Look how horrible it is. Bloody blah. We can't have government like this. This is power out of control. This is crazy. This is like the new world order. This is the state, police state, bloody blah. So as it intensifies, the opposition to it also intensifies, right? And then at some point, it implodes because this pattern is trying to get transformed. It will implode and then boom, it starts transforming. Then from there, the old gets defunct, right? It dies. And then the new has to come out. So the potential with Pluto in Capricorn is for the rebirth of the political systems of the world. And if it's done properly, if the initiation, the collective initiation goes well, there will be new ideas about how to do government on the planet Earth that will emerge at the end of that.
So 10 years of crushing fascist governments until we decide that we don't need a government, is there a kind of halfway point? But it does seem to be like this is like really breaking it down to the merest granule, because it's so corrupt all the way to the core that we need to question the idea of what is government and do we need it.
Yes.
Given the fact that we're no longer wanting to be herd animals, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we're more intelligent and more capable than that, and it's a very wrong thing to do.
I don't think the new ideas of how to do it have emerged yet, but I think they will. Right? I think at some point there's going to be new models of doing stuff that people hadn't really thought about before, that are going to emerge on the collective leadership front, okay? And I'm not talking fake revolutionary ideas. Do you know what I mean? I'm not taking replacing this with something else through some fake revolutionary type thing. I'm talking about a real reformatting of how to run the collective consciousness in some ways, right? Again, because we were talking at the beginning when you and I started talking today about the fact that there's all these people from other planets that are listening to our radio show.
Oh yeah, if you're listening, please, if you can blow up the planet, if you got your finger on the button, take it off the button. don't blow up the planet. Apparently, June the 22nd is planetary blow-up day. Just don't do it. Just stay at home that day. You know, take a day off. Go golfing, or, you know, go hunting. You know, take it out on somebody. Take it out on your friends. Shoot them in the face. You know, but don't blow up the world. Okay, thank you. That was a public service announcement.
Okay, those are for the bad people. Okay, now let's make a public service announcement for the good good ones out there that have already figured out how to run a planet in a good way with the models of leadership that work, that are empowering for everybody. Do you know what I mean? They have already figured this out. Start the download into Earth people now as to how to do that. Okay. Like, they can give us some tips, right?
It'd be nice. So, yeah. Going all the way back, to the beginning of the show, and Trixie asked the question, so let's just ask her. You're probably going to say no after all this time. I can't even pronounce it. Almorasite. Owlmora, Owlmaura, Asita, Aumarasite, Aulmariawasite.
No, is the answer.
No, I didn't think you would, because I've never heard of it, but Nick, have you heard of it? Aumarasite.
No, not, but I could look it up, but it's not one of the ones that I've come across so far. Okay.
In the
do people, because we started on crystals and we're coming to the end, do people want some tips on crystals that I think are really cool?
Katie's crystal tips.
Okay. Cool crystals. We talked about damborite, okay? Damborite is a really cool crystal for people that want to go into really a clear, high consciousness, very soothing states. Okay, so that's a really nice, kind of like higher dimensional, angelic type of stone. It makes you feel really good, and if you have your higher chakras open, it can even make you feel like you're traveling into high spaces. It's nice. Crown chakra, third eye, okay? It's also soothing to the emotional body. Now, another cool stone. I have them right here, right in front of me, so it's easy. Another cool stone is phenacite. Phenacite sounds like phoenix, phenacite, okay? Phenacite is a stone that it's tiny. You won't find it in big pieces. You'll only find it in small pieces. And it kind of looks like dirty glass, but it's really powerful, and it will amplify any other stone that you're working with. So if you're working with any stone and you put phenacite next to it, it will times it by 100. It's a big amplifier. If you use it by itself, it kind of powers through all your chakras until it gets to the crown, and it goes out through the crown. So it's a very it's a clearing stone, it's an amplifying stone, a strong crown chakra stone. Okay. Then we have tanzanite. Looking at stones I have in front of me. Tanzanite is expensive because there's not a lot of it on the planet, and it's also pretty, so the diamond type people make rings, and you know, they get the clear tanzanite and they make precious stuff out of it. So if you go and get really pure cut tanzanite, it can cost you thousands of dollars. But you can also get pieces of raw tanzanite for like $30, $40. It's not as clean, but it's fine. And it's another crown chakra stone. It will keep your frequency really high if you wear it. And if you are under attack by dark forces, wearing tanzanite helps because the frequency is so high that it kind of makes it hard for the lower frequencies to come in. It's also very third eye. You can get visions with tanzanite, especially if you sleep with it. Sleeping with it meaning you wear it while you're sleeping, okay? Then we have kunzite. Kunzite is very nice. It's pink. It's a heart stone, but it's almost like a higher octave of the heart chakra. And it makes the heart open, but it also activates some of the higher energy bodies that are centered around the heart chakra. It's also very soothing. It's very healing. It feels nice. If you wear it, it will soothe your emotional body. It's nice stone. Okay. What else do I have in front of here? Appetite. I can't remember what it does, but I like it.
What's it? Appetite?
Appetite.
How do you spell that? Because it sounds like appetite. it's like I got a good appetite for I'm hungry, you know?
Appetite. So it's appetite.
Because I tell you, you caused a stir in the chat room when you said phenocyte. Can we can we just check that that's like phoenicite? Could that be phenocyte?
Let me just see because I can't remember how to spell it. Just I have a book here that will tell me how to spell it. Okay.
There we go. Phallocyte. Trixie, oh dear, it is spring. It is the spring season.
Phenocyte, okay.
There we go. All right, it's with an A instead of an I. So,
So phenocyte says here, third eye activation, inner vision, light body, interdimensional travel, third eye and crown. That's the main chakras. Phenocyte, I like it. It's powerful. If you meditate with phenocyte, it will enhance your meditation. So, like, a lot. Okay. And, well, the appetite that I have here, I've actually made necklaces with appetite. Because it's a nice stone. It feels good. And it is... Let's see. Psychic activation, access to knowledge, cleansing for the auric field, especially the mental body, psychic perception, and it stimulates visionary states, and very good to keep in your pillowcase for lucid dreaming and astral travel. Now, people laugh at me when I say that I used to sleep with stones. But I've done a lot of sleeping with stones since it's spring.
Me too. I have to say, right? When my girlfriend's not there, there's all sorts of. I have all sorts of companions.
Yes, but for some stones, it's actually fun if you can get some masking tape. Right, you know what masking tape is? Like it's tape that it sticks, but it doesn't stick too hard. Right. And so it's not super sticky. And you can get some of these stones and tape them to your third eye or tape them to your heart chakra, right, before you go to bed. And then you will have a very different dream experience. For example, phenocyte, if you stick that to your third eye, you will have some very intense dreams. Moldavite, I used to stick that to my forehead all the time at some point because it would literally be as if you were traveling to other places, other dimensions. It would really activate the whole astral travel, but a kind of higher level astral travel that maybe we all do it, but it was just enhancing awareness of it. I don't know. But you can have some fun experiences with your consciousness if you use the stones while you're sleeping, because you're already in an altered state of consciousness when you're sleeping. You just don't remember what's going on. Some of these stones, they can help you to go deeper with that and also to remember it. Okay? And moldavite, phenocyte, tanzanite, these are all good stones to do that kind of night work with, right? Also, if you're trying to do things that are healing for yourself and you want to have healing in your own body, that also helps. There's a stone that I use sometimes when my emotional body is agitated for some reason and I'm not sleeping very well. You know, folks have some worries or something that are with me. There's a stone that is called Smithsonite. Smithsonite. Let me find it. Smithsonite.
I have a suitcase made of that. It's true. Yeah, it's just like exactly how you spell the suitcase.
It is.
Oh, no, it's Samsonite, isn't it?
Samsonite,
not Smithsonite. Oh, well, son of Sam.
Samsonite is the stone. I'll tell you in a minute what it does. But it soothes the emotional body. It's very soothing. So it will help you sleep. It will also heal the emotional body. So Smithsonite, soothing for the emotions, releases stress, deepens love, compassion, relaxation, deeper perception. Element is water, so it's a water stone. And it targets the emotional body at all levels. And you can find it in pink, in blue, tangerine, orange, and yellow. The color of the stone indicates the level of the emotional body which the stone is directed towards. It can be used on any chakra depending on the color that it has, right? The one that I have is pink and purple both together. And it is very soothing. It's like an emotional body healer. So if you're going through stuff that is kind of stressing you out, it helps you to take that down. Another stone that does that a little bit is lepidolite. Lepidolite. I think that's how you spell it. Lepidolite. Which is a pink stone that has a lot of lithium in it. And I used to sometimes... I have two big pieces of lepidolite. And sometimes when I used to work with people at home, which I don't do anymore, if people were extremely stressed out for whatever reason, I would give them a big piece of lepidolite to hold, and after a few minutes they would calm down. So it's interesting that one of the active ingredients of lepidolite is lithium, because lithium is one of the active ingredients that they give to people that have bipolar, right?
It's number three, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's something about the lithium vibration that is very soothing for the body. It's not just about chemical reactions in the brain, it's also about the vibration, right? Okay, so lepidolite, it says here, emotional healing and balance, serenity, relaxation, stress relief. Fourth chakra and sixth chakra, mostly targeted, right? Lepidolite is most affecting in calming frayed nerves, helping one to release stress, worry, and setting on the path of willing acceptance. It's very good for helping people to find peace, helping people deal with angry people, financial worries, loss of jobs, relationships, big changes in life that have to be integrated in a very short time span, right? So it also takes away the storm from emotional stress. And brings more awareness into the emotional body. So these are good emotional body stones. I don't know if anybody else struggles with stress every now and then or emotional stuff. But
I don't know anybody who feels stress at all. No, I don't know anybody. I mean, you know, my single mother friends, you know, nobody. It's just like we're all just jolly and happy.
Okay, so we've done the stress stones. We've done the higher consciousness stones, some stress stones. Another good thing is grounding stones, right? Things to be grounded and also protection. So for grounding and protection, smoky quartz is always, people know this stuff, but I'm going to put it in anyway, smoky quartz. Smoky quartz is in some ways is a garden variety stone in the sense that there's a lot of it around. Most people know about it, but it's still an excellent stone for clearing and grounding. And balance in general. So smoky quartz is a good stone to have in big pieces around your house because it will help your house also to stay clear and ground. Black tourmaline, that's another one. Depending on the black tourmaline that you use, some black tourmaline is literally protection and grounding. Other black tourmaline is also clears all your chakras and goes up to the crown. So there's some black tourmaline that is very grounding and some that is very clearing and activating, and it depends on the black tourmaline that you play with. I've worked with both kinds, but both are it's a good stone to play with. And then for protection, also peridot, green peridot. That's also good for protection. So for the people that always work with dark energy or that are attacked by dark energy, apart from your organite and organ type stuff, you can have pieces of black tourmaline and smoky quartz and wear some peridot, right? And those things will keep you clear and protected to some degree. You know, there's a limit to what stones can do, but it will help, okay?
So, That's the end of Katie's crystal tips. That did echo on, I think, actually, no, you got the echo, didn't you?
I did.
Oh, damn it, hang on, here we go, this is for the benefit of the audience. Katie's crystal tips. Hopefully that should have gone, dear. Anyway. Meanwhile, so that's brilliant. That's it would be good, you know, to have a crystal correspondent. I'm getting messages in from Wolf Baby over there, and she's saying that there are new crystals that are coming in from Greenland. Mm-hmm. New crystals being discovered, probably as the Arctic melts. You're getting a whole load of new crystals coming up, and they have all these funky names.
That's very true. And also, it seems that because the Earth is conscious, right, there seems to be always new crystals popping up. They're either ones that nobody was aware of before, but they're there, and all of a sudden, they're out. Do you know what I mean? It's like you with the shungite. All of a sudden, everybody's playing with it because it's needed, right? So it's out there into the consciousness. At some point,
totally, because Nancy actually requested of Gaia, particularly, you know, there came the answer. Yeah, so exactly, Gaia's giving us what we need.
It's giving us what we need, and in fact, from that point of view, our planet is actually quite marvelous because it gives us flowers that we need to make flower essences that can help us heal the body. Gives us herbs that we need to heal the organs and to do deep cleansing, to get hormones to go back into balance. I mean, there's all of these different herbs that cure pretty much anything. If you really truly understood what it is that they're doing, there's no need for any pharmaceuticals or any of that, because it's all already in nature. You just need to know where to go get it and how to use it, right? It gives us crystals for our consciousness, and whenever we need them, it chucks out a new kind. All of these new ascension stones that have popped out, it's not just a marketing gimmick. There really are stones out there that enhance your ability to go higher with your energy bodies and with your chakras. They really are out there. Were they out there 10 years ago? No, because they were not needed. So, and every couple of years, there's some new stones that come out that help you with that. So we have all the food that we need if it was not poisoned, right? We have everything that we need to eat. So the planet is very rich and abundant. No wonder the reptilians want it.
Well, exactly. It's a little delicious little fruit, a little physalis.
It is. It's got a lot of good stuff in here, right? Although I'm not sure that they appreciate the same good stuff that we do. Well, you know what I mean? Like, they appreciate other stuff about the planet, but they have a much more parasitic kind of consciousness. So it's more about taking than it's about appreciating, right? And a lot of humans have that consciousness too, because that is what they've been conditioned to be. But I think that the original human, in its full, clear, multi-stranded state, right, is very much in harmony with this planet. Because we're always meant to be here anyway. There's all this stuff out there that says that humans are the parasites of the Earth and, you know, we're the worst thing that happened to this planet. I don't think that's true. I think that what the worst happened to this planet is the parasitic consciousness. But that does not mean that we, as human beings, are inherently parasitic. Have we been conditioned to be parasitic and to not understand, appreciate, see? Absolutely. But I think that if we were who we are meant to be, because we're also being used and stripped and diminished, right? If we were all that we were supposed to be, without wounds and without conditioning, and with all of our genetic material the way that it's supposed to be, and with being fed the right foods and all the rest of it, the potential of the human being is very vast and very beautiful. It's just that we don't, again, it's a state that we have not witnessed in many people, and therefore we have very few models to look at, but it's the journey that we're on at this time.
And with that, my dear friend, Katie Galanti, thank you for for winging it 4 hours, almost without a break. I don't think we've had a break in 2 hours.
No, it's true. It's true.
Mm-hmm. You're amazing.
Well, and thank you for listening to my silly school stories.
Oh no! Very good. Very good. So,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Lots of love to everybody, and to the next time.
Good night, everybody. Stay tuned for Healings and Meditations with Frank and the EarthMind Think Tank Group. Beyond.